room, you can't move, you can't speak. It's a horrible, horrible feeling.
You know, you're looking out into the darkness and then you see a figure, but it's darker than the darkness.
I just get this like really creepy feeling, and I see this this like shadowy demon looking figure in the front seat of the car.
She used to come into my room at night and stand right by my bed, and I just was petrified.
I remember I saw something fly by my bedroom window. We heard the bathroom door shut, so then we looked out my bedroom window down the hallway and the bathroom door was wide open.
So we came around the bend and we saw Eyeshine. This thing stood up. I mean, it stood up. And it had high pointed ears, it had a snout, had a long arm, and it grabbed the deer.
Billy, my brother, welcome to Let's Get Freaky podcast. How are you, sir?
Yeah, mate. How are you getting on? You all right?
Very excited to have you on the show, man.
Do you know what I like about it is you give you take your time with your guests. You let them talk. You listen. You ask the right questions and stuff. And you know, I think we've got quite a bit of work to do together in the future, haven't we?
Yeah, you know, what's 100%. Thank you very much for your kind words, man. I really appreciate it.
No, I appreciate being on here, mate. You know what I mean? I've not got my own channel or anything like that, so it's not like I'm coming on here to get moved over to my channel to take you know for you to point people in my direction or anything. I ain't got a channel. I've got some interesting stories. You know, we're hopefully going to work together in the future and stuff. And I'm hoping that some of my stories tonight, you know, your listeners can relate to. And you know, it might encourage some people to come forward with the stories and stuff.
Yeah, man, that's what it's all about.
Yeah, I mean, I'm 37 now. I'm an engineer. I've been an engineer for well, pretty much most of my, you know, from early 20s onwards. You know, I had a variety of jobs. You know, worked in the rail industry, worked in civil engineering, worked in the oil and gas industry, welding, fabrication, that sort of thing, agricultural engineering. But yeah, so I'll start off. So yeah, so I grew up in Scotland on the Fife Coast, which is it's just north of Edinburgh. You've got a little bit of Scotland that sort of sticks. It's called the Fife Coast. So yeah, I grew up in a little village just outside St Andrews where they play golf. And it's called Largo Ward. Like, so I'll give names. I'll give locations, and you know, if any viewers want to go and check stuff out, you know, they're more than welcome. So yeah, so I was a young lad. We moved to a village, but I was really born in Dundee. And mum and dad, we moved to a village called Largo Ward outside St Andrews. But one of my earliest stories. This new family moved to the village. So in these little country villages, you know, there must have only been about, I don't know, probably only about 40 houses in the village, mate. You know what I mean? Buses every hour.
Yeah.
And, you know, there was no shop. I think a shop came in. You know, the people were doing like shops from the garages and stuff. You know, we were going back to the early 90s. And, you know, people would have a garage, they would convert it to a shop. There was a pub in the village. This new family. Moves to the village, and I was probably about eight or nine years old, and this family, there was a few lads in the family, you know, young lads, and there was a girl. For the purpose of this for the interview, we'll call her Tina. Her name wasn't Tina, but I'll call her Tina for the purpose of this. Only because I've not asked permission. I've not spoken to this girl probably since I was about 9 years old, mate. So I don't be going to mention names and stuff. So yeah, so out in these villages, there's nothing to do, mate. I think the only thing to do was like play on the play park or something, and you know, wave to the tractors and lorries riding through the village. I think you know what I mean, as a kid. And outside of the village was a sewage works, and to get to it, what you'd have to do is you'd have to go across a football pitch up a farm track, up to a farm, cut through a farm. And what probably from the farm was the sewage works is still there now, mate. Just outside the village of Langley Ward. It was about, from the farm, is about an eighth of a mile or something like that. So what I do before this family moved to the village, I'd go up there on my own. I'd go exploring, so on my own. My dad would be either in bed or my dad would be in the pub or whatever. My mum would be doing so. I used to go on this, but 8 years old, it was a safe area. You know what I mean? So
yeah,
I'd be out there. I'd go out and I would just want, you know, you say to your mum and dad, like, oh, you're going to the park or whatever. You know, you weren't going to the park, were you, mate? You know what I mean? You're going exploring. Like.
Yeah.
So I'd go from the park across the football pitch over the little river. I'd walk up to the farm. I love tractors and stuff. I still love tractors now, mate. You know what I mean? So you go up and I'd be like spying on the tractors and the people driving the tractors on the farm, and I'd be like waving and stuff. But yeah, so you cut through the farmyard. You walk about an eighth of a mile, and you come to a sewage works. Now I've been there many a times. Like, you know, the palisade fence, you know, with the metal spars going up, and there was a little gap you could sort of squeeze through. So I used to go in, and there was like these filtration machines. So I'd go and climb on the machines, and they go right round in circles. You might have seen, you know, sewage works, put the stones in. They've got these things that, you know, them washing lines in your back garden. You know what, yeah. Like squares, aren't they? Yeah. There's a few machines there, so they sort of look like them if you're not in the turn around. So I'd be like climbing all over them and stuff. Anyway, there was these some of the filtration tanks in a sewage works. They look a bit like canal locks. You know, when they're empty. I don't know if you've ever seen a drained canal lock. You know, it's deep in it, you know what I mean? The concrete sides, it's all concrete. There's three of them in that sewage works. There's two or three of them together. And I'd see them when they were empty. You know, so like you go up to them, you look inside, and they're really, really deep. Like. So, yeah, so I'd been there many a times. And this family moves to the village. And I've become very friendly with this girl who was about 11. So I'm 8 years old. She's about 11. And we hang around together. And I say to her one day, I say, do you know what? I said, let's go up to the sewage works. We'll go out, we'll go exploring and stuff. And she thinks it's a great idea, right? Off we go. Off we go. We're going down to the park, to the football pitch. And off we go up the farm track, through the farm. We go like through the farmyard. And we've got like a bit of a walk down this bumpy track and come to the sewage works. So we go in and we squeeze through the gate. And we're going just exploring, we're playing on the machines and that together and stuff, and we walk over to these tanks, right? Now these tanks today are full, right? And the like you walk up to a wall, and it was probably to our chest height is the wall off the ground, because we're only small, you know what I mean? So it's probably chest. I mean, you can just, we've been popping our heads over. And when we look into the tank, on top of the tank is a load of like scum, you know, it's like settled on the top. Right, and it looks like concrete. It ain't concrete. Right? I know what's in there. You know what I mean. So we're looking, and it's probably from the top. It's probably about 2 foot to a meter just below the wall on the other side. So we come to the wall. The wall was about, I don't know, maybe 2 foot wide, and then there's a drop into the tank, and it's got the scum on top. So anyway, so. Tina gets up on the wall, right? She thinks she can walk on this. And I said, whoa, whoa, whoa. I said, that's water. That's deep. It's 20 foot deep, bro. It's 20 foot deep. There ain't no way out of this tank, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I said, wait there a minute. I'll show you. So I walk over to another machine, like a filtration machine. And there's loads of stones, like the filtration machines. It goes through stones and stuff, the water, to filter it. And I pick up a rock, yeah? Before I even turn around, mate, I hear this noise, ba-dumph, yeah? And she's trying to walk on it, right? She's 11 years old, bro, and she's fully clothed, right? And she's jumped into this tank, right? And I turn around, bro, yeah? And I fuck it, pardon my French. It makes me shiver, bro, even now just talking about it, yeah? I've had to live with this my whole life, bro, do you know what I mean, yeah? And I turn around, and I run to the tank, and I pull myself up. She's 11 years old, bro. And she's fully clothed, yeah. And I'm trying to grab her, yeah. I'm lying down, and like she it ain't just water, do you know what I mean? It's a bit of sewage and stuff, and I'm reaching for her. She's trying to grab me. She's going under. She's coming back up, and I'm trying to grab her, and I can't reach her. So I jump down, and I run to the farm, yeah. And I've legged it as fast as I can to the fence. I've squeezed through the gap, And I can just see the farm in the distance. And I know, mate, she ain't getting out of that tank. Yeah. There's no steps. She can't grab anything. And I run as fast as I can, my little legs, mate, to this farm. And there's a tractor driving around. And I'm like, whoa, whoa, whoa. I said, I need help. She's trying to explain that this girl fell in the tank. And the guy's looking, the farmer's looking at me. And he realizes something wrong. Yeah. He gets out the tractor and starts running towards where we're coming from. Right? And I shit you not, bro, yeah. She's walking up the farm track towards the farm. Right? Mate, I've got a 14-year-old girl, bro, yeah. And on my daughter's life, she's walking up the farm track, right? The story in my book, I've called it Miracle in my book, right? Because let me tell you, from the nearest people, we were an eighth of a mile, right? In the other direction, this house is further down this road, yeah, where the sewage works are, and they're about half a mile away, right? There was no way that girl was getting out of that tank alive. Wow. Mate, I've been back there. Now I'm older. I've been back there since, mate, and I've walked around that sewage works. And I go in there and I look around. Yeah, there's no ladders. It's a solid concrete wall, bro. Right. I've got a 14-year-old girl now. Right. Now, if I was to throw my 14-year-old girl in a river, right, messing around, fully clothed, right, she ain't getting out. She was an 11-year-old girl, but she was 3 years older than me. She was an 11-year-old kid. Yeah, fully clothed, mate, down a sewage tank. Something picked. I don't care what anyone says, right? Something was watching us that day, and something pulled her out of that tank.
Yeah.
I don't care what anyone says, mate. You know what I mean?
What did the girl say? Did she say how she'd got out?
No. She was just crying. She was just crying her eyes out, yeah, walking up the path towards us. And she was covered in like toilet paper. She was covered in feces. Yeah, she was covered, bro. Yeah, and I always remember she had a purple shell suit on, purple and black shell suit. I've never forgot it, mate. You know what I mean? And she was covered from head to toe, soaking wet, her hair, everything.
Yeah.
And
wow.
It's one of the first stories in my book, bro, and I've named it Miracle because
no way she would have got out.
Unexplainable. She wouldn't get out. Mate, I was lying down trying to reach her. You know what I mean? When I couldn't pull her out, and she couldn't even reach my hand. And so that's one of the first things that I sort of encountered in my life where it's an unexplained event. I can't explain it, mate. You know what I mean? I knew. Yeah, I was going back to a girl dead in that tank. I knew it, mate. You know what I mean? And it's still to this day, it makes me cringe. When I talk about it, it makes me cringe.
That's incredible. That she got out.
Yeah, she got out. Yeah, she got out. Yeah. Wow. No idea how, mate.
That was it. You didn't stay in touch with her after that, or
just after that, we moved to England. So
okay.
So So we moved. I moved to England when I was about 9 or 10, and I moved to Stockport, just outside Manchester. Well, I'll go on to a freaky story. So I'll tell you a story from my railway days. And you know what's coming, don't you? I finished my apprenticeship. I I was in maintenance on the railway, and I'd worked all Scotland, like I say. I worked in London, relayed the bridge at Charing Cross in London over the Thames, relayed all that track. I was a technical guy. I was very, very good at what I did. And so I ended up being the head of an inspection team in the Peak District. And I worked out of a little depot. I worked out of Stockport, which was Stockport King Street. The depot used to be behind Stockport train station, and then they moved it to a place called Stockholm Road, and a place called Edgeley, just outside Stockport Centre. But then I went working in the Peak District, a little depot called Chinley, and I was a team leader for an inspection team. So I worked with a couple of old guys. I'll tell you what year it was. It's going back to 2012, 2013. So, well, I started the railway in 2007. Just so seven. So I'd been on the railway a few years. Can't remember exactly how old it was. So I've got an inspection one night. So one of our inspections was from Chinley all the way out through the Hope Valley, the Peak District, to a place called Earl Sidings, which is some railway sidings. Well, it's got cement wagons from Hope Cement Works. So these big cement works. They put all the cement in tankers. They bring them up to a place like Earl Sidings. So this line it's on is the Manchester-Sheffield line, the main line from Manchester-Sheffield. And on this line is like two of the longest tunnels in the UK. So what's one's like Totley Tunnel just outside Sheffield, which is like 9,760 yards. I don't know exactly. And there's another one called Calburn Tunnel, which is the deepest tunnel in the UK, which is like 2.2 miles long. I can't remember. So anyway, so this inspection we've got, I'm with two older guys. It should have been a team of four of us out on this night. There's a team of three of us. So there's a tunnel to be inspected. Excuse me. So I drop off the two older guys like in their 50s. So you can't go through a tunnel on your own for health and safety. You know, you've got no phone signal. If you get hurt in there, nobody's going to hear from you. So what we said was, I'll drop them off at the start of the tunnel so they can walk through the tunnel. I'll drive my van around to the other side of the tunnel, leave my van, and then I'll walk the next 5 miles on my own. Right? So we're talking 1 a.m. In fact, I think I dropped them off at about 11:45, half past 11 at night. I dropped them off to walk through the tunnel. I drove around the side, parked my van up. It's probably 45, I don't know, probably close to 1 a.m, 1:30, 1 a.m. By the time I get round, so I access the track, walk down some steps, and I access the track, and I start walking up towards the other side. So I'm walking towards Sheffield, say for example. Walk along, I get to Edale train station, which is about probably half a mile from where I've accessed. I'm walking halfway through the platform. And I'm just like looking about, looking at the track, looking at the platforms and stuff. And I just glance into the car park. So I'm halfway through the station. The station's about 110 metres long or something. So I'm halfway through it. So the platform up to my chest. So I've got halfway through. And on Edale station, so Edale is very, very remote. So it's like middle of the Peak District. There's no phone signal. I've got a tiny little orange phone, which is like an emergency phone for my work. And I'm halfway through the platform. And I look through the fence, and it's just like a little chain link fence. They've changed it now. They've done probably a wooden fence, but it used to be just like a little chain link fence. And I look through it, and at the other side of this fence, it's a pair of eyes looking at me. And I'm like, I've got my low beam on my torch. I'm looking, wow. I sort of squint. I put my full beam on. There's a black panther sat there just watching me. Like, it's as big as a medium-sized Rottweiler dog. And you can tell it's alert. It's got these, like, you know, like its eyes are like the size of a... You know, you get marbles. You got the small marbles, and you got the slightly bigger ones. So the pair of eyes, like a greeny yellow, just looking at me. It's shiny black. It's got its paws together, and it's just looking at me, just staring at me. And you can see it, like, breathing from its nose now. There's steam everywhere.
Wow.
And I'm like, yeah, mate, yeah. and it's like, you know, it's on the other side. It's not even 40 foot from me, not even 40 feet away, man. Yeah. And it's sat in the back of the car. And like the car was like a Vauxhall Vectra or something, or whatever it was. And it sat at the corner of the car, and its head was in line with the lights, you know, the back lights. Yeah. So yeah. I had scale of how big it was. You know what I mean? I didn't see its tail because it was stood, you know, its paws were together, you know, its legs were totally straight in front of it, and its paws were together. And it's just like, it's got these little ears, and it's just looking, just watching me. So I've got nowhere to run. I've got no one to phone, right? There's no phone signal or anything. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, like, it's got the height advantage. And then I don't know if it could have easily just sprinted towards me and just hopped the fence and just dived, you know, just dove on me, man.
Yeah.
So, you know, from the cat's point of view, I think what's happened is it's heard me coming along the track, you know, walking on the stones. And it's probably sitting watching. You know, for all it knows, it could be a deer, it could be a badger or whatever. But when I got to the station, all it can see is, you know, like my body from the platform up. So it's only, it only sees a small bit of me because the rest of me is in the platform. So I've put the put my full beam on. So all it can see is a bright light, really. It can't really see what I am. It doesn't know what I am. You know what I mean? So I'm watching this for about, I don't know, between 5 and 10 minutes, right? I've not taken my eyes off it. And then, you know what it is, mate? You know, when you get up close to one of these, it's like mysterious, man. You know, it's like, it's exciting. Yeah. It's scary. You can hear about them on the internet all day long. You can hear about eyewitness reports and people say they've seen them or whatever. Until you actually see one in person and how big it is, nothing can quite explain it or describe it, really.
Yeah.
And I didn't take my eyes off it because I thought, you know what? If I take my eyes off it and it comes and runs at me or jumps on my back or whatever. So I must have been watching between 5 and 10 minutes. But then I think to myself, you know, I've got to sign this track, I've got to inspect this track, and I've got to sign it off ready for the first train at like 6 in the morning. And it's probably this time is now, is about, I don't know, 1:30. 1:45 in the morning, something like that, maybe 2 a.m. And I've got another, probably got another 3.5-4 miles to go yet. So I didn't have my phone with me because my phone was in the van. There's no phone signal on this route. And the phone that had just come out was like the iPhone 4 anyway, like the iPhone 4, the iPhone 5. I think the iPhone 4 had just come out.
Yeah.
And I had this little Nokia phone. It was on Orange Network. The railway network's running 02, but for that particular patrol or that inspection, we had an Orange phone because the 02, any of you viewers there who are familiar with the Edel area, the Peak District, you won't get a signal on 02 in the Hope Valley. So we had this Orange phone that only picked signal up maybe 3 points on this inspection. It was for emergencies. If I'd have found a defect on the track and you couldn't run a train in the morning, I can go to a certain area, I've got one bar of signal and a phone with Echo. So no, I didn't get any pictures or anything. And yeah, I set off. So you come out of Edel station, you come over a bridge, and you start walking, and the railway curves round to the right, and you're on an embankment. So you've got the fields down below, you've got the fences down below, and you're really high up. You know what I mean? So you can see around about. So I walk a mile from the station. I walk exactly a mile, and I know it was a mile because I know the mileage of the station, right? And then I was just getting towards an access, and on the access we've got a board which says the mileage of the access. This is where you are. You know, if there's an emergency, you are here. Yeah, it gives a mileage of the railway. So I was exactly 1 mile from the station, and I'm starting to walk over a bridge on Edel Road. As I get to the bridge, I can hear the noise of an engine coming. And what is it? That's my colleagues. I pick my van up. Now, what they're doing is leapfrogging me. So they're gonna meet me further down now. You know, they're going to drive to the sidings. They're going to meet me. As I get down, as I get to the bridge, and they're driving along, I just sort of hold myself at the bridge. And, you know, I've put my hand up. You can see my head torch. They beep the horn. They put the full beam on. I acknowledge them. They drive under the bridge that I'm walking across. And they continue going to the side, which is about 3 miles away, so 2.5 miles from where I am. So anyway, so I finish my patrol, my inspection, if I finish it, get to the sidings, I walk through the, it's like all trains parked up, I walk through all these trains. I open the side door of the van, right, and it was Barry, right? And I open the side door, Barry and Gavin, that's the two guys I was with.
Yeah.
I open the door, and I went, guys, you won't believe this. And they went, this is, they was that words. They went, whoa, Billy. They went, we don't know what it was, but when we saw you at the bridge, so it was like you've been followed by a big dog, right? So they could clearly see up on the railway, right? 20 foot behind me was a Black Panther. It followed me all the way from the station, crept behind me. Now, I never heard it again. I never saw it again.
Wow, man.
Crept along behind me. And mate, it must have been walking along the rail, like, you know, not the stones, but the rail itself. I didn't even know it was there, mate. Didn't even know it was
out.
Yeah, the guy saw it. The guy saw it.
They saw it. Yeah. I didn't see it again.
Wow.
Yeah. So they saw it. So
wow, man.
We don't know how long it followed me for. It might have followed me even further, right? But I had the accurate mileage. We had another witness of the sighting with the mileage. So Rick Minter heard about this story. A guy, he's like the big cat specialist, top guy, right? He's from near Gloucester. Rick Minter. So yeah, UK's top big cat expert. So the story itself was, I was not so much signed to secrecy, like not to disclose it, but you know, we're working on the railway. My manager politely asked me, don't just keep that to yourself. Don't be telling people about our story, because the reason behind it, mate, Network Rail owned the track, right? The infrastructure, right? But the stations, so they own some stations. Well, like a lot of stations are running and owned by operators like Northern Rail, for example. Like a Northern Rail is an operator, Virgin Trains operator, you know, Avanti West Coast, they're operators, right? Yeah. So, you know, if you start saying there's a big panther, Black Panther on the loose in Edel, and nobody wants to get off the train at Edel station, the operators aren't happy. Northern Rail are going to be like, well, no one's catching the train to Edel because nobody will catch you. You've scared them all off. So my manager politely said, look, don't disclose that to anyone. Anyway,
wow.
I left the railway in 2017. So that's when my story came out. It was in 2017. And this guy contacted me called Rick Minter. He said, can I interview you? I said, yeah, of course you can. So I was on the, I forget what it is now, it's the big cat conversation with Rick Minter. You can see there's a full podcast about this.
Yeah.
So he said to me, he said, one thing I'll ask you. He says, how do you know it was a mile? I said, well, I've got the mileage of the station. There's another witness. And I've got the mileage of where he saw me. He said, that there, he said, to my knowledge, that's the longest stalking by any big cat in the whole world. And I went, oh, yeah, whatever. And he went, oh, I said, listen, mate. He said, we've only ever known it. So he's in touch with all my people in America, Africa, big cat specialists. He says, I'm going to phone a guy. The world's leading big cat expert is based in South Africa. He says, I'm going to ask him. We'll give you your information, tell you what it was. So it was a leopard that followed me. So we call them black panthers. I know now that it's a leopard. So when you look at a leopard, they are black, but they've got the markings of a leopard. You see them in the light.
Yeah.
You know, they've got like these like sort of patterns. So it was a leopard that I was followed by. And but he speaks to this guy in South Africa, gives him the look. So I had to take pictures. I think he spoke to Barry. I had to take pictures of the locations, which I sent him all. I sent him the maps, you know, of the, you know, Google Maps of the, with a line drawn in where I was walking to, where I was seen at the road bridge.
Yeah.
So he could do it all as well. He could work on, you know, on the scale of the, on Google Maps, and it was a mile. And when he contacted the guy in South Africa, told him a story, he said that is the world's longest stalking. It's a world record for a stalking of any big cat. So yeah, so that was like, wow, one of the experiences on the railway.
Yeah, that's incredible to see something like that, and then for other guys to see it as well
to validate
it even more.
So Rick Minter said to me, he said you're very, very lucky, you know. He said what they normally do, they normally just get you from the fully for like a quarter of a mile if you've got cubs or something to get you off the territory.
Yeah.
He says, why do you think it followed you for that long? And the only thing I can think of, mate, is I was wearing a high visibility clothing, and I've got a light. So I think it's been confused when it's first seen me, not knowing what I am. When I've walked out of the station, it's jumped over the fence or whatever it's done. There's some little woods there or whatever. It's gone the track behind me. And you can see there's light flashing, because I'm looking from side to side. You know what I mean? So the light's not flashing, but it's moving.
Yeah.
But then I've got high visibility clothing on, and seemingly the way animals' eyes work, they don't know what high reflective clothing is. They can't work it out. It's, it, you know, I think it's curious, mate. But then obviously I look bigger than what was at the station. It's come up behind me and thought, what is this? Wow. So yeah, so that was
I find it interesting that your boss has told you not to share it as well.
Yeah.
Very interesting. Yeah. You wonder how often that happens where things are covered up. Just the big cats, but with everything, you know. Yeah.
You're totally right. Now, after that story went on the podcast, the Big Cat Conversation with Rick Minter, after it went on there, loads of railway people contacted him. First of all, they said, we know the scripted track he's on about, so that gave me some credibility. It verified the station, it verified, but you know what it is, mate? I can't come in here and lie to be found out. You know what I mean? So the stretch of line was confirmed. The mileage and that was confirmed. Train drivers had got in touch with Rick Minter. Train drivers from like the 90s who said, we've been driving that section of track, freight trains, and we've seen Black Panthers on there ourselves and seen cats on there.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it gave me more credibility, you know what I mean? So,
so many people have seen Black Panthers all over the UK, including my mother-in-law. So I've got a family that's seen it as well.
Yeah.
I find it fascinating, man, because they're definitely out there, you know?
Yeah, 100%, mate. And I think it goes back to, you know, there was like the Dangerous Animals Act in the 1970s. You know, people kept these as pets. And the 70s came along, you know, Dangerous Animals Act came in. You weren't allowed to keep exotic pets anymore. So, you know, if you've had an exotic pet for however long, you ain't going to put it down, mate.
You're going to
let it go.
Yeah, a lot of people done that.
Yeah, they did. So I think they've just let them go. I think they've, you know, they've found each other in the wild, and they've started to you know, reproduce, repopulate.
In that area that you had your encounter,
is
that quite a forested area?
Yeah, well, in the whole valley, you've got the railway running through the middle.
Yeah.
Both sides, you've got just hills for miles, mate. Farms, you've got livestock. You know, you've got your deer, your rabbits, and you know the amount of deer you find dead on the railway, you find dead sheep on the railway, you know, calves. There's all sorts you find dead on the railway, and I think the railway would be easy pickings to a big cat, you know, to a leopard or a panther, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, true, man.
Easy meal, mate. And I think, you know, it's away from the public. You know, people aren't.
Walking around,
that's it. I mean, Expedition X with Jessica Chobot, they found out about it, didn't they? So they came over and it's I've already been filmed for it. So we'll be on. So if any of you are interested, it's on. There's an Expedition X which they came over to the UK and filmed. And I'm actually at the train station being interviewed about this storyline. So that's
interesting stuff, man.
The next bit of let's get freaky was my dad's just passed away, and I had to clear his house out. He still lived in the same bungalow where I slept on the settee as a youth.
Really?
He still lived in the same bungalow, right? That's where he passed away. Yeah. So I've got a flat just around the corner, right? I go to bed one night. And I keep a dream journal next to my bed. So this one night, I get woken up at it was 3:18 a.m. in the morning, and it's February, right? It's the start of February, sometime February 12th. I can't remember exactly. I think you've seen the copy of the dream journal or something. So my dad's passed away. Living on my own. I wake up at 3:18 a.m. And what woke me up was I had the Galaxy Note, you know, the phone. Yeah. And it had a stylus in the back of it, right? And a little pens. The noise that woke me up was the pen being removed from the phone. It made a certain, the only time the phone ever made that noise was when you took the stylus out. It made a certain noise, right? Now, that noise had been made. And I woke up. It was static in my room, like really, like, you know, you got a telly on when you walk in a room, static, right? the room was full of that. And the red light, the LED was flashing on my telly. Like, you know, just like flashing. Right? But I woke from this dream. And what the dream was, I was driving a Mercedes Sprinter van, right? Right-hand drive. This is exactly what my dream journal says, right? So my dream journal's got the date. It's got the time, which is 3:18 a.m. And I drew a picture of driving the van, a group of people. So I'm driving this van, and I'm pulling up to a crowd of people, and there's a girl who's getting beat up. She's been beat up, getting beat up, right, by this bald guy. I get a good look at the guy. I get a good look at the woman. The woman's wearing a black dress, right? She's got like an English or Scouse accent. It's Kirkcaldy High Street in Scotland. This is where it's taking place. I know where it's taking place. I know what she's wearing. The name Maddie gets mentioned, right? This guy thinks he's killed her. They're waiting for ambulance coming and stuff, and she's been beat up. She's between, in my dream journal, I wrote down she's between 30 and 35. That's what I put in my dream journal. So I think no more of it. I write it in my dream journal, and I think no more of it. So I'm clearing my dad's bungalow. I still haven't cleared my dad's bungalow out. I'm in the process of clearing it out and stuff, and I've got a small transit connect van. And what I did, I listed all my dad's stuff on Facebook Marketplace. So there was like a washing machine, there was a settee, there was a telly and stuff, and it was all going for free, right? So just sort of help people out. So I get this message from this lad, and he says, "Can I have the washing machine? If you still got it?" I said, "Yeah, of course you can." He said, "I've got no transport." I said, "Look, it's all right." I said, "Cover my fuel. I'll come and drop it off. I'll put it in my van. I'll drop it off to you." So I go to this house in Kirkcaldy, and I knock on this house. This lad, about 18, comes to the door. He says, "It's not actually getting dropped off here," but he said, would you mind? He says, "Could you put some more stuff in your van? It's just going a few streets away to my flat." I said, "Yeah, no problem, mate." You know what I mean? I said, "Put as much as you can in the van." And I said, "I'll take you over to your flat." So I go to this high-rise block of flats in Kirkcaldy. And he's at like flat number one or something. So it's bottom, ground floor. It's one of the first flats. Go in, we carry the washing machine in, empty the van, put some stuff in his house. I think his girlfriend was in there or something. And he says, "Oh, my mum's just in the kitchen sorting the electric out from the flat. She's like sorting out the, you know, little plug-in key thing, whatever it was, top-up thing." So I'm getting ready to go. And he says, "This is my mum here." I walk into the kitchen and it's the woman from my dream. 100%. Right? So the girl, the woman that I saw get beat up in my dream, okay, is this lad's mum. 100%. Do you know what it is, mate? I never forget her face. I've got a memory, right? I don't know why it's like that, right? But like how I can retain information, I can, you know what made me really good in my career was I could retain knowledge so easy. Like, you know, you should show me how to do something once or do a formula once. Yeah. It just sticks. You know, I just retain it, mate. So images, knowing people, to face, whatever. So I knew straight away it was her. So what I did, I went home that night and I've got it on my mind. I'm sitting in my living room watching telly and I thought, do you know what? I'm going to message her. Right, so I got her on Facebook, sent her a message. I said, "Can I tell you something?" I said, "Don't think I'm a weirdo, right?" But I said, "Can I share something with you?" She goes, "Yeah, what is it?" And I sent her a photograph, that picture of that dream journal, what you've seen already, what was on that other thing.
Yeah.
I sent her that. She read through it and she went, "How did you know that?" And I said, she says, "I was attacked in Kirkcaldy a couple of weeks ago." Okay. It hadn't actually been out in the newspaper yet, right? So wow. She was attacked by a fella who was this bald guy, right? Okay. So she says, "I'm 37. She says, and she had an English accent as well, right? Now she's in Scotland, English accent. She says, she's like a Scousey accent, right? She gets English accent. So that was right. She said, "I was wearing a black going out dress that night," right?
Yeah.
She says, "My name's Amanda, but my nickname's Mad Maz," right? Yeah, so I had Maddie in the dream, right?
Yeah.
But she had called Mad Maz, right? So it weren't exactly Maddie, right? But it was close. She says, "I'm 37, but yeah," she says, "I look between 30 and 35. the guy with the bald head, right? She says, "What I'll do for you." She says, he's in jail at the moment, this guy. But she says, "This is all to come out in the newspaper very, very soon. I'll send you the link." So I got sent a link. It's got a picture of the guy. I think you saw it the other night, didn't you? Did you see the newspaper article the other night?
Yes, yeah, I did.
And
yeah.
It's the same guy from a dream, right? So everything was right. Now I didn't tell the future, mate, because it was a past event.
Yeah.
So I don't really understand how I was showing it. I don't know. It hadn't been out in the newspapers.
How long did it happen? How long was the dream after the actual incident?
Within 2 weeks.
Okay. Yeah.
I'd have to get the date of the. You'd have to look at the date of the newspaper.
Yeah.
And look at the date of my dream journal, and it would all, you know, you'd be able to work out. But yeah. It was within 2 weeks, mate.
Wow.
So everything was to a T. So the only thing I couldn't work out was, why was the driver a Mercedes Sprinter van? And that's the bit I could not work out, right? Until I found out, or I came across an article, that the NHS in Fife were using Mercedes Sprinters as the ambulances at the time. So,
wow, man.
Yeah, mate, right. So what's happened here? Did I for a short period of time take up the view from the ambulance driver?
Yeah.
And look into, I don't know if I looked into his memory. I don't know, right? But I had the vision of, you know, I'm pulling up at these people.
Yeah.
Right? I must have been the ambulance driver to pull up. Yeah, mate. I can't explain it, but, you know, everything, you know, was to a T. And then the girl even sent me all the pictures of all the bruises and everything. She showed me the whole lot of how she'd been attacked and stuff. She says, I don't understand how you know all that.
So when you're having these dreams, because you've had more than this has happened
a few times.
Is it like you're really there, or does it feel like it's a dream? You know, like when you can sort of tell the difference between a dream, do you know what I mean? Or does it feel like you're actually there?
Well, see, this is where we're going to get into like lucid dreaming and stuff. You know, like we sort of had this conversation before, haven't we? So lucid dreaming. I think, I watched a scientist talk about dreaming and stuff, and I'm going to explain what I think the best way to sort lucid dreaming and stuff in multiple dimensions. He described it, this scientist described it as, imagine a loaf of bread, right? And each slice of bread is like a parallel universe or another dimension, right? So like time travel, for example, right? We can't go back and forward on our timeline, okay? But we can go to the one next to us, so we can jump to the next slice of bread. So the next slice of bread might be 6 months difference. Do you get me?
Yeah.
You can go back, you can go forward, but you can't go back and forward on your own, on your own timeline, if you get me. And what I think lucid dreaming is, I think lucid dreaming. So I've had lucid dreaming before, right? So in lucid dreaming, you can fly, okay? You can manifest stuff, okay? You can jump off a building. Do you get me? You can experience a lot, right? And flying is one of the best things to do in lucid dreams.
Yeah,
I think lucid dreaming is the bit between the slices of bread. Do you get me? So like lucid dreaming is your bit between the slice, your gap, right? So you can manifest stuff. It's between dimensions. So you can manifest stuff and you can go places and you can fly, whatever. But I think go beyond that, you're in another dimension. You can't fly. Do you know what I mean? You smell, you talk, you hear it. It's all the, I've been there, mate. It's all the same. So when it was the one with the ambulance, well, that's what I think, driving the Sprinter van, ambulance. That there was the next slice of bread next to us, I think. And I think I'd crossed right over onto the other dimension, but the timing was out, you get me? So it was 2 weeks
previous.
But it was next to us, but just 2 weeks back. Yeah. So I think that was playing out exactly as it did, but it was a bit behind.
Wow, man.
Yeah, mate. I think that's how I gathered the information.
Yeah.
Because so it's like the multiverse, isn't it? You know, like, yeah, that's going on right now. There's something next to us going on right this second.
Yeah.
Right alongside us that when we're in our normal form, we can't see it, we can't touch it, we can't get in there. But I think your consciousness, like you go to sleep, lucid dream, you can go beyond that and you can go in there.
Yeah. Interesting, man.
Yeah, man. I can't explain it. You know what? It's just sort of happened to me. I've not tried to make it happen. It's just happened. You know what I mean?
This just happens at random times as well. It's going to happen at any time, like when you're dreaming.
Yeah, my dreams are pretty wild, anyway. Probably part of the reason is look at my misspent youth. The damage I've probably done to myself is I've probably opened something. You know what I mean? It could have opened something in my brain that shouldn't be opened, and it's allowed me to either go across, experience something different. Because we only use a small percent of our brain, don't we?
Yeah.
The human brain. I'm obviously half it shut off, but you know, like you say, 10%, 15% of them.
I think it's 10%. I'm not definitely 100% sure, but I'm sure. I know it's a really low percentage of what we use. Like we have the potential to use. I don't know how you got the rest, but interesting stuff, man.
Yeah, mate. So that was. So, yeah, I kept in touch with that girl for a while. I'll maybe try and get pucker up with you. You know what I mean? And you can see the she'll tell you herself.
Is there a connection with you and the girl? Was there any connection at all?
Really? No. To be honest, we got quite close after it.
Yeah.
But we never did anything. We spoke very, we sort of became quite good friends. Like, she couldn't really understand it. You know what I mean? But anyway, I ended up moving to. So my dad had passed away. I had that dream and stuff, and I ended up. COVID was on and stuff, and you know, my dad had passed away. A lot of industries were shut, and I thought, do you know what? I've got nothing up here. I was there for my dad. You know what I mean? Dad's passed away, so I ended up. I moved down to the Peak District. I moved back to England. So, I moved to New Mills, a place, New Mills, Derbyshire. Some of you will know where it's in the Peak District. So, yeah, so we'll move on to, I went into civil engineering, so I was doing surveying, driving loads of different machines all over Lancashire for a civil engineering company. And then my mate phones me out of the blue and he says, Bill, he says, what are you doing with yourself? I said, I'm doing some civil engineering, like some surveying and stuff and doing projects all over Lancashire. He says, so he was working for a railway consultant, not specifically a railway consultancy company, but he was doing like engineering, like civil engineering was part of it. And this company wanted to expand a railway department. So they had like a really, really small rail department. They wanted some more railway knowledge to come in, expand the department, pick some new people to run it, and, you know, make some, you know, in a network with, you know, supply machines and manpower to jobs, you know, all over the UK. So he says, can't think of anyone better. You can work for us. So I said, I'll join us. I said, well, I'll work for you. So I left my civil engineering job. I was living in the Peak District, and I was commuting to this new job was in Leeds, so I drive from Leeds 58 miles one way to work in the morning, leave from New Mills to Glossop over Woodhead, which is over to like the M1, jump onto the M1 and then head up to Leeds. So I was there for 2 weeks, and I finished work on a Friday, went home. I went to bed. It's we're going to get on to quite a freaky bit here. Like, it's had quite a massive impact on my life, to be honest, mate. So I rented a four-story building with my mate. It belonged to his dad. We rented it off his dad. And I had the attic with a big velvet window and stuff. And on the Saturday night, I go to bed. And it was the only night I ever slept with a velvet window wide open. So, you know, it wasn't like long ways. It was out on the side of my room. So it wasn't like I was lying in bed. I could see the stars. It weren't like that, right? You know, I couldn't really see out of it. When it was open, I couldn't even see out of it, really, mate. I had to sort of stretch around where my bed was positioned to sort of look out. So I go to bed on a Saturday night at the early hours of Sunday morning. I wake up to this noise, right? And the noise is, the only way I can describe it, is like if you get two budgies next to each other and they talk together. Right, so this is like just after 3 a.m. or something. So the noise was like not like a tweeting or anything. It was just noise. It's very, very hard to explain. Like two budgies, like when you sit them next to each other, they go, they make this like weird noise together, right?
Yeah.
So I opened my eyes and stood next to my bed is an alien grey. Right. And it's not, they're not like, it wasn't like anything you see on the telly, mate. It looked old, right? Now, I've got no curtains in my room, big window, it's open, right? It's like 3 a.m. My room's light. It's not light, light, but you can see. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And there was an alien grey so next to my bed, about 4 foot tall. It looked really old. It looked like, I think somebody said, I think when we were speaking to Debs and that, like somebody said, like elephant skin, like it was grey. It had big eyes, right? And it just looked old and wrinkly. It looked old.
Wow.
I looked at it, and I wasn't scared, mate. You know what it is with the life I've lived, Mom. I said it before. I've already won, right? Listen, if me and you were out in the woods, bro, right, and a portal opened, right, and it was a one way trip, I'm going.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. You've got a family out there, bro. You're good at what you do, right? I ain't got what you've got, right? And you and you're a credit to your family, bro. I'll tell you that now. I don't have that, unfortunately, right? But you know what?
Man, that's not true.
I would shake your hand, and I'd be like, "Listen, bro, you take care. I'm going, mate. Even if it's a trip, I'm going." So this alien's next to my bed, and I put my hand out. And my exact words were, "Hello, baby alien," and I put my hand out to it, and it put its hand on my hand, right? And this heat went through my body. It nearly made me pee my pants. It was this heat was like it just microwaved me. That's what it was like, right? Like I was microwaved. And when I've got hold of it, my feet started to lift off the bottom of the bed. Now I don't mean I was being lifted, horizontal lifting up. It wasn't like that. It was just like my legs were straight in bed and my feet started to lift off the bottom of the bed, right? And I pulled my hand away, right? And then it disappeared, just like that. And I was like, I was still warm inside. I thought, fuck yeah, right? So I went back to sleep and I got up at 10 in the morning and I phoned my cousin Charlotte right away. My cousin Charlotte verified this. And I went, "Charlotte, so you don't believe what happened last night." I told her the story. She said, "Just promise me one thing, boy. Don't ever tell anyone that story." So I started laughing. Like. So on the Sunday night, on the Monday morning, so I've got work on Monday. On the Sunday night, the Monday morning, about 9 or 10 p.m., I start to get a very, very sore head. Right? Now, I don't mean... I had a bit of a sore head. I took some paracetamol and I felt better. I'm telling you, it was a sore head, right? And I'd only just started my new job. I'd been there for 2 weeks. I got in my car Monday morning. I started driving to work. I got to Glossop. And you know, the headlights, it was dark mornings, like, but you know, the headlights off the cars.
Yeah.
Like, it was like, it hurt my head so bad. I had to turn around and go home, right? And I went back home, phoned in sick. And listen, mate, I never phoned in sick from work, right? So I phoned in sick And mate, my boy's like, "Are you all right?" I said, "No." I said, "I'm not." I didn't tell him what happened, but I was like, "No." I said, "I'm not all right, mate." So I hadn't eaten, I hadn't drunk anything, I hadn't slept. I tried to sleep, couldn't sleep. Tuesday was the same. I had to phone in sick. Head was worse. So I've had a sore head now from 10 p.m. Sunday. I'm on Tuesday now, and the head's still sore. It is so sore, man. So by Wednesday, an ambulance has taken me to hospital. I go to Stepping Hospital in Stockport. They take me in. They said, "What's wrong?" I said, "Well," I said, "I've not slept for 3 days. I said, "I've not eaten. I've not drunk anything." I said, "I'm ill. Something's happening inside me." And they said, "Right, okay, we'll do some tests." 2 COVID tests, negative. Okay. I've got all this information, right? Okay. Right. 2 COVID tests, negative. Blood tests, negative. Okay. Then they took me to a CT scanner, put a pink fluid in me, negative. Can't find anything. They examined me all over, can't find anything wrong with me. They said, they were puzzled, right? These doctors were like, "We don't know what's wrong with you." They said, "If we can't find anything, I'd send you home." And I was like, "Well, mate," I said, "if you send me home, I'll die." And they started laughing. Not laughing in a disrespectful way, right? Okay, right? Because they were good to me, right? Okay. But they were laughing like, "Come on, mate, you know, you'll be all right." I was like, so they went for a conversation outside the room, came back in. They wanted to send me home, and I'm begging them. I am begging them, mate, to keep me in. And I know it's not because I'm scared to go home or anything, because I know I'm sick. I know that you know when something's not right inside you, right? Yeah. You know, we know best. It's our body, right? So they're trying to send me home. I said, "Right." I said, I'll tell you what's happened, right? And I told them that story I've just told you. They looked at each other and they went, "That's never happened. Come on." I said, "Listen to me." I said, "That's what happened." So I was adamant. I wanted to stay here. You know what they did? They said, "Right, I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll run a they asked actually. They said, "Can we run a HIV test?" And I said, "What do you run a HIV test for?" They said, "Can you give us more parameters in the blood? We can go more in depth into your blood, right? To see if there's anything we've missed." They ran an HIV test, came back negative. There's nothing out of the ordinary. So they said, "We're going to have to send you home." I said, "Don't send me home, boy." Anyway, I went home. I went home either the Wednesday night, I can't remember exactly. It must have been Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday night. Yeah, it's probably late on Wednesday, tea time Wednesday. And I was ill, mate, right? So I've not eaten, drunk. They've put what they have done at the hospital, they've put drips in me. You know, so I had fluids in my body, so.
Yeah.
It felt a little bit better with the fluids in me, but I still couldn't eat anything or whatever. I wasn't going to the toilet or anything. So, to cut a long story short, I don't go and work all week. And luckily, my mate Stephen Guesty was living with Guesty, right? He borrowed me his charger lead for for his phone. Luckily, on the Saturday night, he'd come in from the pub. He'd come into my room, shouted me, didn't get an answer, come into my room, and found me collapsed on the floor, right? Blood coming out of my mouth. And there was blood on the floor. He'd come in for his charger lead. He said, "Do I have for an ambulance?" And East Midlands Ambulance came out on the Saturday night and picked me up. Now, before he came in, he came in about 1 o'clock. Around, I'm going to say about 10:30 at night, or maybe 11 o'clock at night. Now, I hadn't... Look, let me tell you, Tommy, right? I swear on my daughter's life, I hadn't even slept a wink for over a week. Right? I hadn't eaten for over a week. I hadn't been to the toilet. I was like skin and bone. And blood's coming out of my mouth now.
Wow.
My mate, about 10:30 before he found me about 1 o'clock in the morning, about 10, I can remember just getting up out of my bed and going and looking at my bed and going, what am I doing? Like I started stripping my bed covers and stuff, just like stripping them off and then I collapsed on the floor. And what, you know what that was? That was DMT being released in my brain because I was about dead. So when you're about dead, your brain will give you a shot of DMT. And it made me think there was nothing wrong with me. I was one day from being dead, mate, right? And my mate found me. And East Midlands Ambulance came. And they came in. They looked up, one look at me. And they went, can we just take your T-shirt off? Took my T-shirt off. And there was marks on my back, right? What I know now, there was marks on my back. And they went outside of the room, had a conversation, and came and went, you need to get in the ambulance right now. Okay. They shot me with adrenaline in the house, picked me up, took me straight into the ambulance, rushed me to Stepan Hospital. There was an emergency team waiting for me when I got there. And they said, get him up to ICU now, right? I was in intensive care for 2 weeks, man, right?
Wow.
And then I was from it. So I've got every colour fluid going in me. I've got lime green, I've got pink fluids going in me. I've got saline solution going in me, antibiotics going in me. And then I was on the ward next to ICU for another 2 weeks. And then I was on another ward for a week. Wow. Right. Yeah, mate. Right. And they examined me, did every test possible, and they did not know. It was blood poison I had.
Yeah.
And nothing popped up during the week.
Wow, man.
Crazy.
That is...
They said I would never have made it to the Sunday. I would have been dead. For Sunday morning, I would have been dead.
So lucky your mate found you, man.
Yeah, mate. If I'd been from my mate guest, I'd be dead now. 100%. Yeah, mate.
So what do you think happened, obviously, with that interaction with the alien? Something's happened. Well, and it's...
So somebody mentioned, like when we were talking about the other night with some other people, weren't we, right?
Yeah.
And what I said, like, it was like radiation poison.
Yeah.
Radiation. And it's not something that I don't think they checked for anything like that. I don't know if it would flag up on the test. I don't know, mate. But whatever happened between me and that entity, alien, whatever it was, right? There was a transfer of something, right? And that's the heat that went through me. Something went inside me.
Yeah.
You know, that heat was like being microwaved from the inside.
Yeah.
So. I've got all the doctor's notes to prove that. It was no COVID. You know, if that was COVID, mate, why were they doing an HIV test?
Yeah.
Why were they doing a CT scan? Do you get me?
Yeah.
Everybody showed up in a blood test. You know what I mean? Yeah. I've got all these notes, mate.
You
know what I mean? So whatever it was happened, it was some sort of interaction between that being and you know, maybe a mistake was putting my hand out to it. Maybe I shouldn't have put my hand out. But I think... I don't think I'm supposed to wake up. I think it had come for whatever reason. I don't know what for, but it's come along to maybe do a test, to look at something. You know, can they see into your mind? I don't know, mate, right? But I don't think I was supposed to wake up. Because as soon as I opened my eyes, that noise stopped. When I opened my eyes and looked at it, that noise stopped just like that.
Wow.
So it was communicating with, it was doing something. Whatever that noise was, something to do with it, like whether it was communicating to, maybe there was something another one of them I didn't see, maybe it was invisible. There was some sort of communication going on. I don't know what it was doing, mate, right? It was making this noise, but it stopped. As soon as I opened my eyes and put my eyes on it, that noise just completely stopped.
Wow.
So,
Other than when it put its hand out to grab your hand, did it do anything else at the time? Was there any...
No. No, I just put my hand out to it, and it just raised its hand up and put its hand on me, just like, and I couldn't tell you if it had three fingers. I couldn't. I can't go into that.
Yeah.
I couldn't say I saw its hand clearly and it had four fingers or whatever, mate. I can't say that. You know, I'd be lying, mate. But it just it put its hand on my hand.
Yeah.
Right? And that touch was. This heat was like, I don't know, mate. I don't know. Really.
Yeah. And whatever it's done, it's affected your body to a level where it nearly killed you.
Yeah, mate. Yeah. And I think if I'd have woke up, I don't think there would have been any effect. You know what I mean? But, you know, maybe it was stupid, but I don't know. But it's changed me. What I think what's changed in me is being in hospital that length of time.
Yeah.
Joe, I'm not. I've had problems with my speech, with a few, there's a few words I can't sort of pronounce. You can probably tell going through this thing. I have problems pronouncing some words. I'm not as sharp as I used to be. Do you know? And I think it's to do with the illness. And not so much it's taken anything from me or you know, it's damaged me. I think what the illness has caused, being ill for the week, and then, you know, being down on the Sunday, whatever it done to my mind, the blood poisoning, whatever it had done, yeah. I'm a little bit slower than I used to be and stuff. I'm still, you know what I mean?
You seem pretty sharp to me, man.
I'm not sure about that. But I think you're stupid more than anything. Yeah, so that was...
How long ago was this, Bill?
So that happened on... It was the 10th of October, just after my birthday, it was 10th of October. Yeah, because I celebrated my birthday at work when I was in the office on the 4th of October. I was working in the office over in Leeds, so I celebrated my birthday in the office. Then Friday was the 9th, 10th. So this all started on like the 10th of October, 2021. And I was off work. I couldn't even drive or anything, mate. I was off work till February. And I never went back to that job. I never went back to the railway stuff because I'd only just started there. I didn't claim any sick pay off them. You know, when you're given a good opportunity, yeah. I'm a fair guy, you know what I mean? And I wasn't going to go off on long-term sick. I'd only been there 2 weeks. You know, the director was a good person. You know, I was working with one of my friends. And my friend offered me the job. You know, I'm not going to go and say, oh, yeah, well, I want full sick pay for 4 months. You don't do that to people, mate. You know what I mean? Anyway, so I didn't go back to that. But what happened, I was off work till February. I went back to civil engineering. But when it was like the 21st of December or something, I'd started driving again. And my cousin lives in Accrington in Lancashire, so which is just outside Burnley. And I took some Christmas presents up on the Monday. It was the Monday night. Don't quote me. You'd have to have a look on it on a calendar exactly what the date was. It was like the 20th or the 21st. Monday. It was a Monday. Monday night, 20th or 21st of December, 2021. And I went up to Ancrington, took some presents off, stayed there for a little bit. It was about 7:30 at night, and I'm driving back. So between the M65, which runs from Preston, over to the end of the 65 is in Colne, near Clitheroe in Lancashire. There's the M66. The M66 comes off the M65 and it'll take to the M60 in Manchester. So I've come on my cousin lives at Accrington, so I've come at Junction, I can't remember what Junction is, right? I've come on the M66. Now, there's no lights on this road. The only bit where there's lights on the 66 is... If you come through to like Bake Up and Rotten Store, there's a little bit of lights there. Then it's dark again. It's like a dual carriageway on both sides, and it's dark all the way until you get past Bury Leisure Park towards the M60. So I'm going along there, dawdling about, with my music on. You know, I've not been driving long. So I'm taking it easy, and. It's like half past 7 at night, maybe 7:45, and I'm like the only car on the road. I'm driving along. I'm about 6 miles out from the M60 in Manchester. I'm about 6 miles outside of there. I'm driving along, and my dashboard, you know, the flat bit of your dashboard, right, starts to like light up. Like I can't explain it. It starts to like not flash like a strobe light and flash like that, right? It starts to light up and go dark and light up and go dark, right? And I'm like, I'm trying to work out what it is. So I'm thinking, what is that? So I'm thinking it's my car stereo, you know, because I've got my little face, you know. So I put my hand over my car stereo and then I'll turn it off. It's like when I'm face off car stereo. So I'll press the button and so the stereo is blank. The face sort of pops out. Still doing it. I'm looking at my phone. I'm making sure my phone's not on earth. And I'm like, what is that? So I'm like, little car on the road, 40 mile an hour. And my windscreen starts to have like a like flash as well. Like it's hard to explain. It's very hard to explain it to you, like what it was like. I'm driving along. And something just made me look up, right? So when you lean forward and you look up out your windscreen,
yeah.
I lean forward, I look out the windscreen of my car, so above my car, and I'm not joking, mate. So the weather that night, so it's dark, it was like dark nights, right? And it was like overcast, you know, like the clouds. It was maybe on the border of wanting to rain. It wasn't raining, but you know when it's sort of getting towards that point of sort of raining?
Yeah.
And I look up. There is this craft in the clouds above my car, right? And it's about 300 or 400 feet above me. It's in the clouds. Mate, it's wider than the motorway. It's bigger than a jumbo jet. You know a jumbo jet?
Yeah.
Mate, wider. It was like something out of Independence Day, right? And it was right above my car. So as I'm driving, it's the same speed as my car.
Yeah.
And it's pulsing with light. What I'll stick to this day, right, is if them clouds hadn't have been there,
yeah.
I think it would have been invisible. I don't think you would have seen it. Now, I can't tell you it was a disc because I couldn't tell the shape of it, right? It could have been rectangle. It could have been a black triangle. I don't know, right? But it was wider than the motorway. And what it had on it, it was pulsing in light. It was like lighting up and then fading out and then lighting up again. And that was what was reflected in my car. So that light was coming down from the craft, and it was on my dashboard.
Yeah,
and it was on my windscreen. So as I'm looking up, what I can see is a dark circle to start with, right? In the centre was very, very dark, right? And then it had like a plasma ring. So you imagine a big ring. Now, the ring itself was as wide as the four lanes of the motorway. So I've got two lanes on my side. There's two lanes on the side. Just the ring in the centre was as wide as the motorway, right? And then beyond that, it had these spokes, what came out from the ring, right? So you know what it was like? Do you remember them plastic bike wheels you used to get in the 90s? They were called mag wheels. You know, they were BMX wheels.
Yes, yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah, right. So you used to get like a 6-spoke BMX wheel or a 7-spoke, right? It was like one of them, but plasma green, right? And it was rotating, like spinning, man. It was just, I was looking up, and it was like these spokes were just spinning around like that. Like, not dead fast.
Yeah.
But it was just like, it was moving. It was just like, so it had about maybe 6 or 8 spokes. I can't remember exactly. Right. And they were spinning around that ring in the center. Yeah. And I'm looking up and it was like, it was massive, mate. It was like, honestly, the size of it was, it would have been about, I don't know, the wingspan of a jumbo. You imagine a jumbo jet above your car, the wingspan. Yeah. It was as wide as that. Easy, mate. Yeah. And it stayed above my car, right? So when I first noticed it, I was 6 miles outside. I was 6 miles from. I hadn't even got to Bury Leisure Park yet, right? Which any of you viewers who were listening just now who drive the M66, I was about 3 miles from Bury Leisure Park. Now, as you get past Bury Leisure Park, you start to get lights on the motorway, and it goes into 3 lanes before you go under the M62. And it was right above my car, and then I started to outrun it, like so. Do you know, I think to myself now, why don't I pick up my phone? Why don't I try and record it? Why not, right? Do you know what it is? You don't want to lose it. I think if I'd have took my eyes off it, it would have disappeared.
Yeah.
And when people are genuinely in that position, right, the last thing you will do, and I'm sure someone's experienced it, right?
Yeah.
But the last thing you would do, take your eyes off that and try and reach for your phone. Right, because you know what? When you look back, it'll be gone. And there was no way I was letting that out of my sight. Yeah. No, not a chance, mate. So I just, I watched it, and then it started to stop or slow down. And I was only doing 40, 45, and I'd outpaced it a little bit. So I'm thinking, wow, what was that? And like I said, it was in the clouds. And I think the dampness of the clouds showed its location. I think whatever the clouds were doing around the craft, it gave its position away. It made it visible. I don't think it would have seen it. If it was a clear night, it would have been totally invisible, I think.
Wow. That's so interesting, man.
Yeah, mate. It was crazy.
Did you see it fly off or anything? Or
So I've sort of outpaced it, right? Yeah. And I get so as you go to like past Bury Leisure Park on the M66, you're sort of on an incline up and hill, right? So you're sort of going uphill, right? Then it goes to three lanes. Then it actually goes to four lanes, and then your two outside lanes go to the M62 as if you were to Leeds. Your two over lanes is to the M60, right? So you'll go under the M62 goes over the M66, and then you'll go to the M60.
Yeah.
Now as I got under the M62, as I sort of came under it, my dashboard. Now there is lights there, right? But my dashboard in my car lit up again, and I thought, and I looked up, and it flew right above me, right, and it headed straight to Manchester City Centre, straight for it. Yeah, mate. It was flying. It was about the speed of. Do you know what? If you're like outside an airport and a plane's going to land, and you see the speed of the plane, it was probably traveling about that speed.
Wow.
Yeah.
You followed it all the way towards Manchester.
Yeah, mate. Yeah, but it went straight. So what I did straight away, I sent a message to Manchester Evening News newspaper. I'll screenshot the message. I'll send it to you via WhatsApp, right? And I said, has anyone else reported it? I said, has anyone else seen anything? Have you had any reports about this? And I told them exactly what happened. They said, have you got any photographs? I said, no. I said, nope, no got any photographs of it. But it went straight towards Manchester. So I shared like experience with Kane. You know, you know Kane, don't you? Yes. He's had some great experience as well. And he wrote that. He typed all that up. He made a YouTube video about it, and he uploaded it to YouTube. It was on 10 to 15 minutes, and they blocked it.
Wow.
There you go. And there's nothing, there's no copyright. That's my own encounter. Right?
Yeah.
Kane was like the first person I probably shared it with.
Yeah. Right?
He made a YouTube thing out of it, and YouTube banned it.
That's very strange, isn't it?
Strange, isn't it, mate?
I do not understand that. Why they would do that.
And he screenshotted me. So I know that for a fact, because he screenshotted me that why it was rejected.
Yeah.
It was like, oh, like, how is this then, right? Do you know what it was rejected for? Right? It had copyright on it. And guess who put copyright on it?
Who's that?
You ready?
Yeah.
Billie Eilish.
Really?
There you go, mate. I've seen it in black and white. Right?
Was there any music on it or anything?
How could Billie Eilish, right? He didn't even mention my name in it. Right? How could Billie Eilish copyright it? It wasn't a song. There wasn't any song lyric.
No music in the video at all.
No music or anything.
Wow.
Don't have any music in it.
Very strange, man.
There you go.
That's very strange.
Weird.
That is, man. Did you, when you were seeing the craft, did you have any missing time or anything like that?
No, I checked that, mate. No, I didn't have any missing time or anything. No, I did think that. I thought, do you want to check my clock? I'll make sure everything's working. My car never missed a beat. You know what I mean? My car never did anything. I didn't get any strange feelings of static or anything. I didn't have any missing time.
Yeah.
What I thought it was to start with, and I'll just sort of try and rule this out for any listeners, is what I thought it might have been was like a ground based projector. You know, like, you know, when you have them at fun fairs and stuff, or you have them at events, it's like this a big light, projector light, and you can fire it up in the air, can't you? And it'll do a pattern in the sky. Do you know what I'm about? That's what I thought it was to start with. And I thought, well, the light is coming down. The light isn't going up to the clouds.
Yeah.
It's making its own light and it's shining on me. So the light's coming down the way. That was the first thing. But it stayed above my car for about two or three miles before, because there was a bit of a break when it slowed down. And then I saw it again. It flew over my car like later on. So when I was saying that, like, I've done surveying on the railway. Did surveying and I've used like theodolites. I've used laser levels. I've used dumpy levels. I've used all sorts of measuring equipment, you know, for angles and stuff. Total stations, there's another one, thimbles, right? I've, some of your viewers don't know what these are. Trimble, sorry, the Trimble thing for like total stations and like measuring points and that. So you do all your angles and you do all your fixed distance. You know, you can basically you can have like a massive retaining wall and you put all your little targets on and you can come in, you'll measure it. You know what I mean? Take all your data, you'll see if it's moved or anything like that. You know, from meters and meters away. But so I thought, could it have been a ground-based projector, right? Now, it was only 300 or 400 feet above me, but it was very, very wide. You know what I mean? It was wide, so wide, man. It was like wider than a jumbo jet.
I
used to be a bit of a plane spotter, you know what I mean? I know my planes are like your Antonovs, you know, you're your biggest plane of all, your M225, then you had the 124 Condor below that, and then you've got like the A380, 747-400 series, and then like your SR-70 1A Blackbird.
Yeah.
Got all your Boeing 767s, whatever, right? So, I would say I've got quite a good idea of my aircraft, and this thing, the whip of it was, it was mental. So, you know, if you take into consideration the height of how high the craft is, the width of the craft, right, and you're trying to do that on a ground-based projector, right, and I've travelled 2 miles, okay, right. Now, to be that height and that wide, right, the angle you would have to have the projector for over 2 miles, do you get me? It's only 300 or 400 feet above my car. Do you know what I mean? So at 2 miles, 300 or 400 feet from a fixed location, you wouldn't have the angle. It would be impossible, mate. You know, that's if it was going up from the ground, you know what I mean? So, and then obviously when I get to the M60 and I come under the 62 and it flies across my car, so it's travelled 6 miles. You wouldn't have a ground-based projector travelling at that angle. You couldn't do it for 6 miles, mate.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So whatever it was...
Wow.
Yeah.
Do you think there's a connection between the grey that you saw in your room and this craft?
Do you know what, mate? I've thought about it. But the only thing that might possibly connect it is I went away. I've made a note of it here, right? I went away to Telford, okay? I was checking out a fishing pond. So in Telford, there's a hotel, right? And I can't remember the name of it now, right? It's really nice, got really nice grounds. But at the back of it is a fishing pond, carp pond, right? And there's loads of fish in it, right? And you can, it's massive, the pond's massive, you can walk around it and stuff. And I went there, and they've got a bar that overlooks this pond, right? So I went there, and I'm sat in the bar. It was like, me and this girl went, right? And we sat. I'm like looking at the books of like fishermen and stuff, and we've had a few drinks, right? Now, we're sat sort of on the far side. It's like nighttime now, right? So you can't see the pond, right? The bar's nice and that, like big, massive open bar. But there's only like three couples in there. Me and this girl who went in. There was another couple sort of about 40 feet away at another table, and then another couple about 40 feet in the other direction, right? Just sitting there, and me and this girl were just like chatting, just chatting rubbish. Next minute, this black gentleman behind me, and he said, "Excuse me," he says, "Can I have a word with you?" So this girl looks at me, and I went, "Yeah, what is it?" He says, and I look over, and his wife was a white lady, right? Okay, so deal, right? And I look over at his wife, right? I look over and I look at this guy. I went, yeah. So he's had a couple of drinks, you know what I mean? I went, yeah, what is it, mate? He says, "You have walked this earth many times." And I said, "What?" He said, "You're a starseed." He said, "I can see it." He said, right. And I'm like, whoa, right. His wife says, "Hear him out. Just don't panic. Just hear him out, right?"
Yeah.
I'll tell you what the guy's name was, right? Robert Lance Taylor, right? I'm friends with him on Facebook, okay? I've still kept in touch with him, right? He says, "You've walked this earth." He says, "You've learned some hard lessons this life, haven't you?" And I said, "Yeah, man." Right? I said, "Yeah, I have." he says, you've walked this earth many times. It's every time you go to move on, you get sent back to help people. Now, he didn't know anything about me. Nothing. Not nothing, mate. Right? He didn't know anything about my past. Nothing. And he just said, he said, basically, you know, I come from. It sounds stupid, man, even talking about it. Like,
he said, like
a starseed is like, you know, you're sent here for a purpose to sort of help people and whatever. And it was crazy. Like, so I don't know. Maybe there is some connection.
Yeah.
To, you know, he didn't know about. In fact, it was before. I met Robert, that gentleman that I'm talking about, was way before any of my encounters.
Oh, really?
Yeah, mate. We're talking 20, it would have been, I can tell you something. So my dad died January 2020, say 6 months on. It must have been about maybe July or something, 2020.
Wow,
it was warm because I walked around the thing, yeah. So I'd come across him before wow. I even had my alien encounter and everything. Yeah. Yeah. That's what he said.
He had a lot of hard lessons.
Yeah, mate. He said you send back every time. He says, and every time you come back, you're shown a hard lesson. He says, but it makes you. He went into quite a lot of detail, to be honest. I couldn't tell you word for word, mate. I couldn't sit here and relay everything back to you, man. But the way you went on, he said, and his wife said, just hear him out, just listen, like, to what he's got to say.
It was enough to confirm to you that he was talking true.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Wow, man.
Yeah, mate.
Billy, amazing stuff, brother. It's been amazing, man, and I really appreciate you sharing your story because that's some personal stuff there. Amazing stuff.
Yeah. So, any of your listeners that have stuck around to the end, you know, thanks for listening and being patient. Thank you very much.
Charlie. Thank you very much, sir.
You know, you're looking out into the darkness and then you see a figure, but it's darker than the darkness.
I just get this like really creepy feeling, and I see this like shadowy demon looking figure in the front seat of the car.
She used to come into my room at night and stand right by my bed, and I just was petrified.
I remember I saw something fly by my bedroom window. We heard the bathroom door shut. So then we looked out my bedroom window down the hallway and the bathroom door was wide open.
So we came around the bend and we saw Eyeshine. This thing stood up. I mean, it stood up. And it had high pointed ears. It had a snout, had a long arm, and it grabbed the deer.